It's almost about that time. Right about now.
Right about now. Right about, right about, right about now.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Right About Now. I'm your host, Jonathan Small, and as always, I am thrilled that you have chosen to join me today. On the show, we have a very special guest. Somebody I have been trying to get on the show for years and finally was able to nail him down. Ugh, this guy, what an ego. What an ego this guy has. But he finally agreed to come on the show and bless me with his presence. It's like, thank you. Wow, what would I do without having you on my show? So who is this guest, you ask? Well, it's me, Jonathan Small. This interview first appeared on the I Love Success podcast, which is hosted by Peter Umarakowski. Peter hails from Sweden, where he was a world medalist in karate. He has worked with businesses and schools to lead them to peak performance through his unique, simple, and honest approach to goal setting. Along those lines, Peter is the author of The Goal Book, How to Achieve Your Dreams and Create a Better Life. So I was thrilled when Peter asked me to be on his show. I braved the rain showers, the rare rain showers in Los Angeles, got on the 10, went west to Santa Monica where he records his podcast. Anyway, I was a little hesitant to post this interview, but I feel like enough people have asked me to talk a little bit more about my background, my origin story. Plus, I thought Peter touched on some really interesting topics that you might find valuable, including how to find your passion, the meaning of success. He asked me who I am, what I believe in, what my values are. It was like intense. It was like a therapy session. But I came out okay, and I really appreciated watching somebody else's interview technique, being on the other side of the microphone. One disclaimer, I listened to this back at like a 1.75 speed because it was hard to listen to your own self being interviewed, but I just wanted to make sure I didn't say anything incredibly embarrassing or incriminating. And there was one point that I felt might be a little harsh, and that was when I'm talking about my upbringing. And I feel like I didn't give my mom enough credit for making me the man I am today. She has always been incredibly supportive of my writing. She is this podcast's biggest fan. So I just wanted to put a little plug in there for moms. So without further ado, I bring you the I Love Success podcast featuring yours truly.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the I Love Success podcast. Our mission is to help 10 million people in 10 years to achieve their dreams. I can't do it myself, but let's do it together. Help me by being the best version of yourself and do something with your life. Today I'm here with Jonathan Small, an award-winning journalist, producer, and podcast host based in Los Angeles. He's the founder of Write About Media, a writing consultancy service, and his podcast, Write About Now, features interviews with successful writers and editors. Jonathan is also editor-in-chief of GreenEntrepreneur.com, a business site focused on the cannabis industry, and a regular contributor to The New York Times, TV Guide, Cosmo, Details, and Good Housekeeping. In short, he's just awesome. Let's welcome Jonathan Small. Welcome, Jonathan.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, how was the drive today in Los Angeles?
It was very interesting. It took a trip that probably should have taken 30 minutes, took about an hour and a half, but it was fine. I enjoy the rain. I like, it gives me a chance to catch up on my work and listen to podcasts and make phone calls.
I know, right? In this city, it's like when it rains, it feels like you can play catch up. You don't have to feel bad for staying inside.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I just came from New York where it was really raining. But when it rains in New York, it's cold and unpleasant. So this is a nice kind of rain.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm curious about Jonathan Small. Who are you really as a person?
Who am I as a person? I'm a man, I'm a father, father of two beautiful children, a husband. I think of myself as sort of a creative person who is always trying to push himself to do something a little bit more creative, never really satisfied with where I am, which is something I've actually had to work at throughout my life, trying to, you know, sometimes just enjoy the moment. But yeah, I'm a writer, I'm a producer, but as a person, I like to think of myself as a good friend and a good dad and a good husband.
Wonderful. Yeah. And the reason we are here, we met at a meetup for podcasters, and I really felt that we were sitting right next to each other and I didn't know you, but you felt like a good friend. It seems like, I don't know you, but it seems like you had a good heart. And I said, I want to share this story because it's so interesting to meet people that are doing something that they love and still manages to keep like being yourself, which is not always easy. And I think that is honorable. And we're going to talk more about that, and also more about that being hard on yourself, which I think is a trait of a lot of successful people, which is, I don't know if it's good or bad, but we can explore that later.
Yeah.
But let's start with Jonathan as a kid. Where did you grow up, and when did you start falling in love with the words?
Yeah. Well, I grew up in New York City up until I was about 10 years old. I don't have a lot of memories of New York City, but at that time in my life. But I do always remember. My father was a pretty well-known film composer, musician, and he did movies like Marathon Man. His name was Michael Small. He's not with us anymore, but he did movies like Marathon Man, including all these big movies. So my life was always surrounded by music. There was just music always coming, you know, from the corridors. My father always playing the piano. Woke up really early, would play the piano. I could hear him playing. And he was also a great lover of books, and he was always reading. I was read to a lot. He was always talking to me about books that he was reading. I think the two things he liked to do the most was make music and read books. As far as writing goes, you know, I didn't really know. I wish I had one of those stories where I could just say, oh, you know, I just couldn't stop writing from the time I was 10 years old. You know, I wasn't really like that. I had a lot of interest when I was a kid. One of the things that I think sets me apart and was a little bit different is that I was, from a very young age, I grew up right outside New York City. And from a very young age, I was fascinated by hip hop.
Yeah.
And I'm 51, so I'm a little older than a lot of these people that got into hip hop. So I was there from the very beginning. And when I say I was there, I was in New York, but I'm not exactly like growing up on the streets of the Bronx and, you know, doing that stuff. But I was fascinated. But I listened to it, and I was really one of the few people, white guys from the suburbs, that was really listening to it at that time. And I was fascinated with it and like became obsessed with writing raps. And so I think my sort of early introduction to writing was like writing these little raps that I would write for myself. I had this nickname named Kid Finesse.
Oh.
And I would put myself in all my raps. And I was a DJ. I learned how to DJ. I taught myself how to DJ. I bought a Radio Shack mixer and was doing all this stuff. All my friends thought I was crazy because at that time rap was like not cool.
Did you wear FUBU? And
I wasn't that bad. I was more like a rapper in my head. I don't think I had the guts to be really cool and to wear FUBU. And then, by the way, this was pre-FUBU. This was like my Adidas. I have my Adidas shirt on today. Yeah. I feel now I'm embracing my hip hop self a little bit more than I usually do, than I did back when I was a kid. Because I was sort of almost like, I was very proud of it that I knew about it, but I was also like, the kids would make fun of me because they were like, what is this? Like, you think you're like some black kid from the Bronx, you're a white kid from this, you're a white Jewish kid from the suburbs, you know, get over it. But I was really into it. So I was really into music and writing.
Did you rap yourself as well?
I did. I had this like voice. I did all these raps, and I recorded raps with my friends. I had a friend that was a musician, and he's actually gone on to become a pretty famous musician. I don't know if I should out him, but this guy, Adam Schlesinger, and he would put down this tracks and we would rap. And it was so fun.
That's amazing.
And so that was my beginning of writing. And then I went to a school where they had something called composition, which was every Monday We had to write for 1 hour. We just had to sit down, and those little marble composition books you see sometimes, they're very old school. We'd all have to sit down. We would be given a topic, and then we just have to write freehand for 1 hour about it and then hand it into the teacher. And it really forced me to have to write. You know, I mean, like, it was kind of an amazing practice. And I think that was when I discovered that I liked writing. I never was really sure I wanted to be a writer, but I knew that I liked to write, and it was always an option.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. And if we just stop a little bit and talk about that, when you fell in love with hip hop as a young kid and living in the suburbs, a white kid, Jewish kid, and all of a sudden you are falling in love in a different type of music, which I think is so beautiful. Can you just talk about how did that, did you feel different, or how did people treat you? Because I think this is a problem that we have in today's world, right? Maybe in a city like Los Angeles, you have the right to express yourself in any way, because there's such a big diversity, but it's not like that everywhere. In small cities with different cultures, it's sometimes that's hard, and you felt that. Can you just talk about that, and what type of advice would you give to another white kid loving hip hop, or maybe the opposite, you know?
I mean, look, in some ways, that is one of the regrets of my life. I mean, we talked about, you know, talk about our successes and our failures. You know, when I was really interested in hip hop and writing raps and stuff, my family, my parents, who are the most liberal people you could ever imagine, they were hippies, you know, they weren't that into it. They were like, oh, you're much smarter than this. You know, my dad is a Harvard educated, you know, classically trained. And he's like, you know, you're bigger than this. That's like, you know, street music, blah, blah. And it wasn't racist as much as it was just like, they didn't understand it at all. Yeah. And they actually they weren't always so encouraging. I think they've been encouraging throughout my life, but at that time in my life, they weren't. And then, as I said, like, the kids in school were all listening to like heavy metal and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I embraced it and I loved it, but I almost feel like, you know, if I could have had it over, maybe I would have pursued it more in terms of being a producer or in terms of like trying to be a DJ. These were all things I was so interested in. In college, I had a radio show called the Finesse Radio, in which I was like this character, Kid Finesse. And I'd come on and I'd say, you know, hey, it's Kid Finesse and welcome back. And I'd do this whole routine and play all the newest hip hop music. And where I went to college in New London, Connecticut, there were no hip hop radio stations. So I was the only source of hip hop for these kids in the projects and stuff. And they would come up to the station and they'd be like, where's Kid Finesse? And I'd be like, I'm Kip. They never expected it to be me, right? The last person you would ever expect to be a hip hop DJ. Wow. So I was really into it, but I didn't have a lot of encouragement to, you know, one of the things I'm raising a child now, one of the things that I'm trying to do a little bit differently is if I see somebody that has a passion, if my child, and my child thankfully has a lot of passion, one of my kids, Elijah, has a tremendous passion for music, to really encourage it and to nurture it. And even if it might not be like mainstream, like, it's so hard to have a passion about anything, right, in this world. And if you see it, especially in a child, like, embrace it. Like, he'll make the best of it. Even if it isn't something that you see as being like the perfect path for your kid or for your friend, like, just to have a passion, as long as you're not hurting anybody. I just think, so my advice to myself at 18 years old would be, you know, don't worry about what everybody else thinks. This is what you love to do, and continue to do it. So I have kind of come back and rediscovered sort of hip hop and my rap roots kind of later in my life, and have become less sort of weirded out by it or feeling like there's something not good about it. But it took me a while. Like, it was a big impact.
I think it's tricky. I remember back in where I grew up in a small town, there were a couple of guys who wanted to do hip hop and even other type of music artists, and people made fun of them. You know, there was one guy who like really wanted to do hip hop, and they were kind of, oh, who do you think you are? You're not from the ghetto, or like, and then and another guy was a DJ, and people used at a small little bar, like for 10 people, people used to make fun of him, and then he got this song that got so famous, and then everybody, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Why do you think it is that people In the beginning, they won't encourage you, but once you succeeded, they will like be on your side. What's up with that, you know?
I don't know. It's the psychology of people of not, you know, of wanting you to follow the herd, and people don't want you to necessarily be different, and everybody wants sort of, it makes them feel more comfortable if you're the same. I know, you know, from, I can understand from maybe some of my parents' perspective, maybe like they wanted me to, you know, follow a path that they thought would be maybe financially lucrative for me, or, you know, stable for me. And they saw that as maybe not being something. And again, I don't want to put this all on my parents, because I also think that we control our own destinies and we make the decisions. Right. And so, you know, it's not, you know, I can understand where they were coming from. What I wish that I had known back then is that if you really believe in something and you're really passionate about it, don't worry about what anybody else thinks. You know, I spent so much of my life worrying about what other people thought about what I was doing. And as I, as a wiser 51-year-old man now, I'm like, what do I care? I could care less now. But, you know, it seems so important when you're 20 years old, 18 years old, what other people think. And I just wish that I had known that back then. Yeah.
I think that's super, super difficult, because we all, like, as I told you before we started, this is episode 103, where I really dig deep into people's like heart and soul. And and
so, and what I'm feeling it.
So
I wish it was an episode two.
I know, right? So I'm trying to get better at this and really talk about the things that we, that matters, that we don't talk about every day. And one thing that I realized by interviewing and having conversation with all these amazing people just like you is that we all just want to be loved.
Yeah.
We want to feel appreciated for what we do. And sometimes, especially successful people, have a bigger drive to be accepted. And that's why they are pursuing this like wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that? Or like?
I do agree with that. I think there's good and bad in that. I do think that when I've met other successful people in my life, and thank you for calling me successful. I, you know, it's funny because I don't think successful people sometimes think that they're successful, right? Yeah. There's always somebody better or doing something more than they, you know, for anybody. But thank you for that accomplishment. But yeah, as far as success, I mean, I think, so wait, what was your question? Now I went off on a tangent. Your question was, why do successful people...
Do you agree with that people that are usually have a drive or accomplish something have a bigger need to feel loved and accepted than other people?
I do think that creative people tend to be a bit insecure and do want the acknowledgement of other people, because it's all you really feel like you have in the beginning. Like, the, you know, when you get up on stage, I was really into acting when I was in college, and I think probably because I love the sort of immediate response of the audience and the way that felt. You know, writing is a funny thing, because you don't get it's actually a funny career for me to have chosen, because you actually don't get that immediate response. In fact, you very rarely get any response. You know, you write something, you send it. Maybe your editor says, hey, this was pretty good. But most likely they don't say anything. They're just like, thanks. Yeah. You know, I mean, I remember being on a subway, and a crowded New York City subway. And I saw some guy reading. At the time I was working at Maxim magazine. And I saw a guy reading my article, and I was like, oh my God, that's like the equivalent of, you know, being on stage in front of 100 people with this one guy. And I, you know, I don't know. I'm looking at his face. I'm like, does he like it? Is he laughing? You know, and then he kind of turned the page. I was like, no, you know, but you don't get that feedback, you know, as a writer. So, I think that's probably why I get so many writers to come on my podcast, because they actually get to have an interaction with another human being and get to, you know, talk about what they do. But yeah, I think that we are all probably as humans driven by this need to make, to be loved and to be approved of. And maybe that comes, you know, I don't want to get too Freudian or psychological, but it probably maybe comes from wanting that love from your parents or other important people in your life.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a positive, necessarily a positive thing, because I don't think that's the reason to be alive, is to get other people to like you. You know, otherwise you know, if that's the measure of your success, if people like me a lot, you know, first of all, it's never going to be satisfying, because it'll never be enough. Look at our president. I don't want to get too political, but you know, it's never enough. So yeah.
No, I totally agree. And I mean, that's what we're trying to do here, is redefining success, because being successful doesn't have to be that you're a New York Times bestseller or that you're a Michael Jackson or Michael Jordan or whatever. It's not always about that. For me, those are all great things, but what is really being successful, what is that? And I'm still researching this, but my feeling is that it is to be happy and to feel loved and enjoy your family and have a life where you control your days in a good way.
Yeah.
But people still are dependent on you and you're dependent on people, but in a way you feel that happiness and you're not overwhelmed with anything.
Right.
But that is something I think we all strive for, but it's hard to be super successful in one area and have this as well. Mm-hmm. But I think life comes in seasons and you have to be aware that only pursuing one career to be the best at that and neglecting your health, neglecting your family, neglecting other types of things in your life that are important is not going to lead you to happiness. You might be the best writer, but if you really want to be successful and have a balance in your life, you have to find that balance. Maybe I'm doing this for 3 years, but I'm never going to forget. At least at Thanksgiving and Christmas, I'm going to visit my parents. And don't say no, like have that character, which is super hard.
Yeah, I think society has so much put success on a sort of monetary success or status. And, you know, there's a reason that so many of those people that are that you think are very successful are so miserable in real life. You know, not a happy people, not good parents. You know, you read, somebody like a Steve Jobs who, you know, I admire, but like was a terrible dad, you know, and was not a particularly good husband. And so it really is, you know, how do you measure success? How, when you pass away, do you want people to talk about you or do you want to be remembered? You know, as is it more important that, oh yeah, he made a ton of money, or is it more important that he was such a great friend? He was such a great father. I always felt happy when I was in his presence. I felt, you know, I mean, what you said about that was such a nice thing to say. I mean, that would be to me a mark of a successful person that when you met me, you felt like I had a positive energy and stuff. And I would want, you know, me to say, I felt similar about you, that you obviously had something like a sort of like a, you know, you can tell when somebody's trying too hard to get people to like them and when somebody's just confident in who they are.
Yeah.
And it's taken me a long time to be confident in who I am. And I still work at it. But I do think that is a mark of success, is somebody who's just confident in who they are and doesn't have to brag and doesn't have to try to make other people like them. It's just, they know who they are, you know?
Yeah, I think that's so true. And thank you for sharing that. And also being like, I'm a martial artist, so I've been competing a lot. And it's easy to be successful when you're winning, right?
Yeah.
But how do you act when your life is falling apart?
Mm.
I think that's, if you see how people treat others when they're sad or when things are bad, it's the hardest time to be humble or to be nice. But if you can understand that this though shall pass, right?
Yeah.
And still look other people in the eyes and be a good human being. For me, that is honorable. It's not easy. And I'm not saying that I'm doing it all the time, but at least I'm working on it to be that person. And I think to develop as a human being, that's what it's about, you know.
Yeah.
And to be a good father, just like you said, and learn from other people.
Right.
And but let's talk about your first article that got published. Can you share that with us? And do you remember? And what was it about?
So the first sort of my first entry into the business was, you know, again, right after college, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I was interested in music and hip hop. I was interested in acting. I was interested in writing, but I wasn't really sure. Like, I didn't really think I was a good enough writer to be a professional writer. And I took a job as a temp, temporary employee. And one of the jobs I was given was to be a receptionist at a magazine that was called Child Magazine, which was about parenting. And I'm 21 years old. I don't know anything about parenting, right? But I'm just like the receptionist answering the phones. And at that time, magazines were pretty popular. And this was a popular magazine. It was owned by the New York Times. And I guess people, I don't know how it happened, but people started liking me. You know, I was like the only guy, you know, in the whole office, you know, so like a lot of the women that worked there would kind of come out and talk to me a lot. And, they were really busy one day and they said, "Hey, somebody has to do an interview with the comedian George Carlin. Do you have a minute to call him and do an interview with him?" And I was like, "An interview? Like and they're like, "Just do it. You'll do it. You'll be great. You'll be great." So I get on the phone and I love George Carlin. I was a big fan of his comedy. And he was at the time, he was on the show Thomas the Tank Engine, which is kind of a famous show. And I interviewed him for like 20 minutes. I had, you know, prepared probably like insanely like for them, like had millions of questions. You know, he was very nice.
And this was before internet?
How did you do research? Yeah, I don't even remember how I did it. I probably went to the library. I mean, that's embarrassing. Yeah, to date myself that much. No, but I knew enough about him. I think there were some articles about him. I found some magazine articles. Wow. And I also knew, you know, I had the press release of what he was starring in. Yeah, and I don't remember anything about the interview. I don't even know if I still have the interview, but I do remember, you know, doing the interview, handing it in, somebody writing on the top, like, "This is great, awesome job." And then, you know, 3 months later, because magazines take a long time to come out, like seeing it in print, just being like, "Oh my God, my name's like in print in a magazine." Even if it's child magazine, I don't care. It's cool, right? And yeah. It's George Carlin. So that got me, definitely there was a bug there that was sparked. It led to them, I guess they liked what I did, and there was a spot opening as an editorial assistant, which is like an entry level job in the business, and they hired me. And I always feel like I fell into writing and magazines and publishing sort of by accident. It was like I'm not one of those people, and there are, and God love them, my father was one of these people who knew from like the day they were 10 years old what they wanted to be when they grow up. You know, I didn't really know. I knew that I had a lot of ideas. There was a time when I thought I wanted to be a Muppeteer. Like, I actually went and trained with Jim Henson and Jim Henson's wife, and actually like did Muppeting. I'm doing something with my hand right now, and took a course and was invited back to be an apprentice and everything. I was all over the place at that time in my life.
I think that's pretty awesome. And I like the thing, like, I think a lot of people get tired when we talk about success and passion, all this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because for maybe 80-90%, this is all bullshit, because most people don't know what they want to do.
Right.
And they're like, "Yeah, it's good if you have that passion, but I don't know what my passion is," especially when you're 15 or 13 or 20 or even 35, right? So how do we help those people? And I think what you said something really good. You still have to show up and do things.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, they don't know what to do. And instead of doing something, they will like
sit around,
be on social media nowadays and just eat crap food. Like everything in their life is just mediocre. They're not trying. I mean, You were a receptionist at a job you didn't even know if you would do anything with that, but you still were in the right position, in the right place. You were searching. I think I'm curious about your opinion, but I think that is a good trait to, like, if you don't know what you want, do something that you think is fun, or be around that at least in some way, and just try and test.
Yeah. I mean, I sort of see passion as sort of like falling in love. Like when you meet somebody, you don't know right away that you're going to fall in love with this person, you know, but you met them and you spend time with them and then eventually you fall in love. I think people, and me included, might have thought that passion, like one day I would just be struck with like, "Oh, I know what I want to be. I want to be this and I'm going to go do that." And it doesn't really work like that. It sort of happens where you're in a situation and then you start getting, you know, like this one thing starts really exciting you and you sort of gravitate more towards that. And that's sort of your passion. You know, you should just sort of observe, you know, what interests you, like when you're doing something, what is it about what you're doing that you like the most? And maybe that's your passion. I mean, later in my life, I've discovered podcasting and it was kind of by accident, just like the thing with being a receptionist. I was trying to do some marketing to promote myself as a writing coach. Yeah. And I thought, "Oh, I'll do a podcast. I'll interview people. That'll like get me out there." And then I'm like, "Wait a minute. I like this more than I even like writing. Like, this is my passion. This is everything I like. This is DJing. This is being a host of a, this is producing, this is music, this is everything I like, journalism, everything rolled into one thing. Yeah. So I'm happy to say that I probably found my main passion, at least for the moment, by accident in podcasting, you know?
That's super cool. And we're going to talk more about you and your podcast, but I really like that. And it goes in seasons. And I think also, if you don't have a passion, do the things you do with the passion, right?
Yeah.
Like, go all in. I mean, even if you have a job that's a little bit boring, or you're a receptionist at a boring job, but you can be nice to people.
Yeah.
We have a security guard down here, Juan. I mean, he's the nicest guy ever. He talks to everyone. He has the best personality ever.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's probably going to either is going to love his job for the rest of his life, or he's going to be a super good leader or something like that, just because he's doing it. And then you have people that are like, oh, I hate going to my job today. So I know, but try to do something, like smile and be good at it, because it's a little bit more fun then, right?
Yeah. I think be in the moment. I mean, one of the things I'm sort of learning later is, like, you know, we spend so much time worrying about the future and, like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And, you know, I think what John Lennon said, you know, life happens while we plan for the future. And it's totally true that we spend most of the time, you know, thinking about the ahead and, like, what is my passion? Instead of being like, maybe right now, like, I'm going to learn my passion. Maybe today something is going to happen that is going to spark my interest. And look, I don't want to give the impression that I haven't spent times at horrible jobs sitting there bored out of my mind or just hating my boss and just being like, why am I here? And I think that those moments are actually good moment, you know, looking back. When you're in them, they're horrible. There's nothing worse than being sort of unhappy in a terrible situation, feeling like you're in a dead end job. But if you look at it another way, like you say, this too shall pass, it motivates you sometimes to get out of that situation. If you really embrace where you are, even how horrible it is, then it maybe will motivate you to find something different. So I think even the bad times can be something that are going to drive you to your passion. You know, like, I know a lot of people say the goal in life is to be happy. And of course, everybody loves to be happy. But I don't think that that's all of living. I think there is some sadness in living and there is some controversy. And it does, and I, you know, nobody wants to stay in those places. But I do think that you haven't really lived life unless you have had those failures. I mean, there's a reason that every expert or successful person in the world will say, embrace failure. Like, failure is a good thing. That's like I know it's cliched at this point, but there is some truth to it, right? Yeah. But when you're failing, it isn't fun. I hate failing.
Yeah. You know? I know. And I was just listening to a podcast the other day with a guy. He's like devoted his life to study successful athletes and finding tools for mental preparations and mindset training. And one of the things that he was talking about is that we shouldn't be afraid of problems, because that is actually strengthening you as a person and your mind. Just like going to the gym, you lift heavier to become stronger.
Yeah.
If you're grown up in an environment where everything is always perfect, when the shit hits the fan, and it always will, it's going to be hard to handle that.
Yeah.
But people who have had a lot of failures and problems in their life, they almost like shrug it away. Yo, we'll solve this. And I mean, so embrace that, even if it's super easy to say, no one wants problems, but it's actually helping you as a human being.
Yeah. If you can step back during a problem and just ask yourself, like, what is this problem? What is it? Why is it presenting itself to me? And what can I get out of, you know, solving this problem? I mean, I remember being, you know, just hating my boss at one situation and just being so like going to work and just being like, I can't do it anymore. I can't, you know, that feeling. And I just remember like stepping back and being like, what are you learning from this experience? One of the things you're learning is you don't really like working that much for somebody else. And maybe you should start thinking about a career path where you actually don't have to report into somebody, even if that person is amazing. You know, maybe you should work for yourself. I had worked for other people for most of my career, and I sort of had that realization. I don't know if I purposely started working for myself, but it became something that was more in my awareness and sort of manifested itself eventually, that I'm now just working for myself. And I don't know if I could ever work for somebody again, although if somebody wants to offer me a really good job. but you know, I never thought of myself as an entrepreneur, and here I am now running an entrepreneur magazine. I think those problems. You don't really change and have realizations unless there's friction in some way. Yeah. It's the nature of life. It stinks because, you know, I wish life were just one of these things where everything is happy and you just move and you just advance in life and everything is good. But no, it's like, it's hard.
It is. It is. And I mean, compared to, and we're still living in the best moment in time with technology, we're safe. I mean, imagine 200 years ago.
Oh, like, my God.
I mean, we're sitting here, it's warm, we have water. I mean,
yeah.
And still.
Like, what are our problems,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I
compared
know, right?
to like, yeah.
But the mind doesn't work that way, unfortunately. No. So it sees the problems that we have in front of us. But let's talk about your company, Right About Media. When did you decide to start that and like, kind of what are you doing and how
yeah
do you
I mean I again I started out of a problem, out of a necessity. I had been laid off at a few jobs, and I say laid off, wasn't fired. What happened was I had transitioned from writing and being an editor to digital media and to being actually a producer of digital videos. And I had worked at the Game Show Network, and I had worked at this company called Dance On. And I was suddenly transitioning from, again, I've kind of rewritten my career a few times, and I've had to just because of the marketplace. And I had been, but those digital media jobs, as we all know, sometimes they don't always monetize. They can't, you know, companies can't figure out how to make money off of them. And so, you know, both times it was a situation where there was just, they had to basically let me go because the company wasn't making enough money off of what my department was doing. Yeah. So, and it's hard, you know, I have kids, I have mortgage, I have all these things. And I was finding it harder and harder to find like a full-time job with all this stuff, with my age, with the salary that I needed. And so sort of out of necessity, I was like, well, what are my skills? I kind of stepped back. Like, what do I like to do? And what, you know, and one of the things I had done throughout my career was ghostwrite for people. Yeah. Like, and it's very much like what we're doing now, where I would sit down with somebody who is not a writer, but wants to write a book. And we would have a conversation for days and days and days. And I would take notes and record it. And then I would put it into a book. And I liked it, you know, provided that the person I was working with was a cool person. I really actually enjoyed doing that. So I had this idea to start a writing consultancy company. And that's Right About Now Media. And as I said, that sort of evolved. That precipitated the podcast, which we'll talk about later. But I still do that. But it's funny. It's even morphing and becoming different things. Like Right About Now was supposed to be this writing consultancy company, but now it's sort of become also my podcast and media company. And it's gotten me some jobs producing other people's podcasts. Yeah. So it doesn't have like one purpose. It's sort of like, this is me. These are all the things I can offer you. And if you want me to help you write a book, I can help you write a book. If you want me to help you produce a podcast, I can help you with that. So it's kind of like, it's not one thing. And that's one thing I'm trying to figure out is like, what should it be? You know, and what do I want it to be?
Yeah. It's interesting. And like, I mean, when you start something, you always have an idea what it should be. And then you see what's the demand for.
Exactly.
And then
the need?
Those two meet and that's where you find that like sweet spot, right?
Exactly. I mean, all of, entrepreneurial pursuits are sort of based at, you know, what's my why? What is the something in the market, the void in the marketplace that I can help fill?
Yeah.
And then combine that with like, what do I really want to be doing at this stage of my life anyway? Hopefully, you know, it'll come through for you. I mean, my dad always said, and my dad was one of these examples of somebody who was very successful as a creative person. And he always said, you know, follow your passion. Like your passion will lead you ultimately to what you want to be doing. And I'm starting understanding more what he means now by that. To go back to the beginning of this conversation, I used to think, what is my passion? You have a passion. You love music. You know, I have a passion, you know, so I think that was good advice.
What do you think he means when he says that?
I think what he means is, you know, listen to your heart. Like, don't be so afraid to listen to that part of yourself that kind of knows what it wants to do. Yeah. But even though there's all these doubts in your head saying, oh, that's not right for you, you'll always find a million excuses not to do something. But I think you sort of have a little inkling of your mind, you know, what you would like to be doing. You know, it might not be as crystal clear as like, I am going to be a writer, I am going to be a musician, but it might just be like, I'm going to work for myself and try to be creative and help others to be creative, you know, and then we'll see how that'll manifest itself. Yeah.
I think that's super cool. And also the thing, what I've noticed, like I like trust the gut feeling, you know, and the heart, because I've not made some logical decisions in the past.
Yeah.
That's pretty close to me. And I'm learning that wasn't the right choices because it was a short win, but I felt in my gut, this is not the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And you learn the hard way, right? Okay, I should have trust my instincts, even though it might be harder in the beginning, it's the right thing. And when you do the right thing for yourself, it's gonna manifest itself. You just have to have that faith.
Right.
Which is not always easy.
And it's hard, it so often has to do with money, you know? I mean, for me, it was always about making a decision because, oh, I can make more money. You know, that's great. You know, like it was, and that I get the pull of that is overwhelming. You have to survive. You have to eat. You have to, you know, in this case of me, I have to pay for my kids' education. But I don't think that one thing I've started to do lately is say no to things. I used to never say no to anything. Like any writing assignment I would get, I would just take it because it's like, who am I to say no? I need to work. I need to make money. But those are time consuming, those assignments. Yeah. And the way people are paying these days, I think it's criminal, like, you know, what they want to offer me. So I do say no now. And I think it's important to say no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to learn what's the right thing for you, which is super hard. And you have to have those rules in your life. And we talk about success. People who doesn't have any rules for who they are.
Yeah.
You can't live a good life if you say yes to everything and neglect your wife at home or your kids just because an opportunity came up right now that is not aligned with what you do, but you see the dollars for the short term. And I think we are, as human beings, we are always fighting those instincts. And I think the people that are truly have a good life, they know when to say no, and they know what's really important for them, you know?
They know who they are. And I think life is just a continual quest of like knowing who you are. What are my values? What do I believe? I think so many of us, including me, you know, are kind of confused as adults. Like, what do I believe? What are my values? Like, what do I really want to be doing? You just don't, life is happening so fast. You don't even have time sometimes to take inventory and figure that out, you know? I found actually the therapy has been helpful, but just because it gives me a chance to, actually have those thoughts out loud because they're circling out in your head. And sometimes it's nice to be able to talk to somebody about them that's not judging you or whatever.
I think it's super important to do that. And also journaling, right, about
your
things.
Totally true.
And like one thing I did yesterday morning when I was driving, I had a coffee. I said, I'm going to look back at my life and good moments for the last 10 years. And I'm starting going over like all these amazing moments I've had during the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, what a life I have lived. Yeah. And we forget that because sometimes we are just, okay, what's the next bill, the next paycheck?
Yeah.
The next, come on, take a step back, you know? And I met one guy and he said a quote that I really love. He said, this or better, you know, when he thinks about like a choice or whatever it is, he said, this or better. It can only get better than this.
Yeah.
And I think it's easy to say, but to have that mindset, I think it could be good.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure. We talk about, you know, we're talking about all our mistakes and that we've made in our lives. And we all, you know, if people who say they've never made mistakes in their lives are complete, you know, don't trust those people.
Yeah.
I think we also don't dwell on some of the good things, you know, in our lives. Like we just look back at the mistakes and hope for a better future instead of like realizing that actually, like you said, like we've had, most of us have, there's so much to be grateful for. And I think there is a practice, I don't know, it was like Tim Ferriss or something I heard say, like, you know,
Tony Robbins.
Yeah. Like write down, you know, three things you're grateful for every morning.
Yeah.
I thought that was a pretty interesting practice. I tried to do that for a little while. I start these things and I kind of fall off from doing them, get busy with life. And then I remember, but another thing is like, don't beat yourself up if you, you know, forget to journal one morning or don't, you know, don't get hard on yourself. You know, sometimes life happens, but if you can sometimes check in, I think it's really important.
Yeah. I think it's super good. And also what you said, like some people, they say, I'm going to start going to the gym, and they go 1 week and then they miss a week and they say, no, I'm just going to quit. No, it's okay. You're
it's
a human
right
being. Yeah. It's all right. Just get back up, do it again, you know, as good as you can. Not everybody can be Usain Bolt or like, we're all different.
But and by the way, Usain Bolt, we don't know what he goes through, you know?
Yeah, he like, I read his book and he has so much problems, like back problems. And like, so there's always, there's a price to be paid for everything.
Right.
But you just have to see the positive things. And one thing that I think is really positive with you that you found this new love for podcasting.
Yeah.
So please talk about your podcast and what are you trying to do and like how have this evolved, you know?
Yeah. Well, so I have a podcast called Right About Now, W-R-I-T-E, which is a play on my favorite 90s hip hop song, Right About Now, with Rockefeller, with Slim, what's his name? My God, Fatboy Slim. You know, the idea, again, it started off, it was just born out of, I had actually taken a marketing class, digital marketing class, because I felt like I'm always trying to like, my friends, actually, some of my friends tease me like, John, he's always taking classes. Like, you know, you still always take classes. I think that's funny. But I do think it's important to kind of like learn and like, you know, get a, you know, understand new things. And so I have like taken classes in my life, especially, you know, and so one of the classes I was taking was digital marketing. And even though I had done a lot of this in my jobs, I never felt like comfortable with SEO or, you know, all these different things that you need to know from marketing. And so I just took this class and I loved it. And one of the idea of the class was to, at the end of the day, have a project, a company, and then sort of do a whole presentation about how you're going to market it. So my company that I came up with was Right About Now Media. And one of the marketing tools I came up with was this podcast. So that's why I had initially started this podcast, was just because of this marketing class, right? And so I started doing it and I was like, that was really fun. You know, like I still miss having a radio show all these years later. It's one of my best memories from college was having a radio show. I used to like live for it, you know, would study. I would listen to other people's radio shows, figure out how they were doing things. And podcasting is sort of like this natural extension of wanting to be a radio DJ instead of being like, you know, coming up next, you know, is this song. It's like you're actually having conversations with people, but you're able to have. So to step back a bit. So the idea of the show initially was that I'm going to interview writers of all types, like journalists, screenwriters, novelists, poets, rappers, you know, political speechwriters, and talk to them about what, you know, why they do what they do, how they got into it, how they're successful, and, you know, what they've learned. And hopefully, you know, my audience would be people that have similar interests or people that you know, want or aspiring writers or are writers themselves that are looking to be motivated. So that was sort of the initial premise of it. And I've stayed pretty true to that. I try to have on different writers of all different types. And in the beginning, it started off with just my friends, because I've been around for a while and I have a lot of friends that have been very successful as writers. So, but then I exhausted all my friends. after a while, that was like, I don't have any friends left to do this. So I started having to go outside my comfort zone and approach people that I don't even know, that I just admire their work. I think the first person I approached, and I was lucky because they actually said yes, was this guy, Andy Weir, who wrote The Martian, and then the movie was made by, you know, and, you know, he's kind of a big deal science fiction writer, but I just reached out to him. You know, one of the things I've learned as being a journalist all these years and working for magazines and stuff is how to sort of, you know, approach people and not be scared if they say no. Like, who cares? What's the worst thing you can do is either they're not going to get back to you or they're going to say no. So I got in touch with him and he got back to me like a few days later and was like, sure, I'd love to do your podcast. So that was like the beginning of opening the doors to people that I didn't know. And, you know, the podcast is evolving. I've started, you know, it started off, it was just like a Q&A format like we're doing here with like a little intro music. Now, every so often I will, you know, introduce music into the middle of it, you know, maybe do like cutaways where we kind of like do like, you know, I play clips from like, you know, old radio shows or old news reports or stuff like that. I do sound effects. So I'm experimenting all the time. I don't get paid that much for it. In fact, if I get paid at all, I've had a few sponsors, but I feel like it just is something that I love doing every day. So I think it's so important to have something that you love to do every day, right? So I just love doing it. So whether I get paid or not, I feel like, again, my dad's advice, follow your passion and the money will come. Like someday it's going to bear fruit, and it's borne fruit in different ways where, like, for example, now I probably can't mention who I am, but I'm working for like a major company producing their podcast now. And I would have never had that opportunity had I not produced my own podcast, right? It's led to me meeting some really interesting people that I might be collaborating with on projects, you know? So it's led to so many things more than just making the podcast. And we'll see. And I got to be honest with you, like, I'm still... You know, I listen to my podcast and I really like it, but now I'm about 60 episodes in, 64, I think I just put up today. And I'm kind of like, I want to do something a little bit more, like, different. You know, I want to keep doing podcasting, but I want to tell stories. I want to do what I do for a living. I want to write, you know, we haven't talked about my career as a writer, but writing stories, like, I want to tell stories on podcasts. So, you know, again, I'm not satisfied with it. Yeah. Like, I know it's great and it probably will keep going for a long time. Please listen to it. but I want to expand. I want to do other things as well. But yeah,
that's super cool. And we're going to put the link to your podcast so everybody can get the opportunity to listen to and learn more of what you're doing, because I think it's super cool. And you're mixing this kind of writing with a different format, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. And writing, how often do you write? Do you write every day or?
I do write every day. I don't write for pleasure that much anymore. I mean, in terms of like just write my own thing. I have assignments. So one of my full-time jobs is to edit what's called Green Entrepreneur. And Entrepreneur Magazine is a kind of a well-known magazine that's been around for a long time, since the 90s. They actually still have a print edition. Yeah. They called me a few months ago and said, hey, do you want to, you know, the cannabis industry is all the rage now. You're in California. Do you want to cover that industry for us? And I was like, well, I don't smoke cannabis. I don't really know much about it. But hey, why not? You know, and it actually turned out to be pretty interesting. And again, it's like, I'm not interested so much in the sort of the lifestyle of cannabis and like the stoner thing as much, but the business of cannabis is actually pretty interesting. It's very like, all these people are making money. There's like lots of creative people getting into it. Everything, you know, this, it reminds me almost of like the dot-com industry of like the early 2000s, you know? Yeah. And so that, again, it just started off as me writing a few articles. Then it became like, we're going to start a website about cannabis called greenentrepreneur.com. Do you want to be the editor of it? And I said, well, what does that entail? And they said, oh, you basically like, you know, have one or two stories a day. And I said, okay. So I started writing for that. But also, if you're interested in contributing, we always need contributors. So greenentrepreneur.com. You'll put my information in your description. And so I'm always writing for that, website every day. And now they've made a print version of Green Entrepreneur,
which is owned by entrepreneur.com.
Yeah, and it's just called Green Entrepreneur. Yeah. And now they have there's actually a magazine out that will come out on December 4th. I just saw it. And it's like you can buy it on the newsstand. It's called Green Entrepreneur. And again, the focus is always, being an entrepreneur in the cannabis industry, what you need to know, what you need to do, how you need. And I'm thinking about actually doing a podcast based on the Green Entrepreneur, because I am meeting a lot of really interesting people. Like I was just in Las Vegas for a cannabis convention. And by the way, to think that I would be doing this 3 years ago, like it couldn't be further. Like all I've had is mainly pretty bad experiences with cannabis. So it's like, I'm not, you know, but you know, it's become this like real legit industry. And I went to this convention and I met all these, you know, people. But like one of the best stories that I met, and somebody that I wanted to do a podcast about, is there was an old kind of Italian guy, you know, from Pennsylvania, who had an Italian ice company, and, you know, and a real like kind of American success story, you know, built this. And his son was, you know, managing the company. He went out to Colorado on vacation or something with his girlfriend, and he started seeing, you know, how successful the cannabis industry was out there, and was like, you know, Dad, we might want to put some cannabis in our ices, you know, there might be something there. And they built this company you know, and the dad was just thrilled that his son was being an entrepreneur, and it's really sweet. And so like this dad who has, you know, this kind of old school Italian ice maker and his son who's like this new school CBD enthusiast, you know, they put together a company and now they sell these Italian ices that are infused with cannabis. And, you know, stories like that are I love stories like that. And I love, you know, to share those kinds of stories. So again, I'm trying to find the things that interest me within that profession and within that. So that is one thing I write. I also write articles freelance when I can for some of the bigger names are like the New York Times. Yeah. I have been writing for them. I write whatever I sort of feel like writing for them, and I pitch them ideas. And if they're interested, I wrote a story about the Americans. I don't know if you know that TV show. I wrote about one of the stars in that show. I wrote a story for them about a truck called the Headshot Truck, which was like a food truck that was going around LA and taking people's headshots instead of giving them food, which I thought was such a LA type of thing. So I'm starting to write the stories that I'm interested in writing. For a long time, I was writing about things I wasn't as interested in writing. But, you know, it all changes as I evolve as a person. You know, what I'm interested in writing has changed. When I was 25 years old, and like between the ages of 25 and 35, and this is one thing that people sometimes are interested to know about me, I was an advice columnist for Glamour magazine and for Cosmopolitan magazine. And I was Jake. Women who grew up in America, you know, at a certain age, know what Jake was. It was a column that was in Glamour magazine, and it was a guy giving advice to women about, you know, what guys like, right? And I was this guy, and this column has been around for 70 years. There's been many Jakes, but I was Jake for my tenure for a few years, and that was fun for me. That was like, you know, doling out advice to women about guys, what guys think. That was pretty interesting. And then I did it later for Cosmo in a column called Ask Him Anything. So, but now if you were to ask me to write that column now, I would be like, are you kidding me? Like, what do I know about dating and like, you know, online dating and Tinder? And I don't know anything about that. So, you know, I've written about things that I was interested in at that time in my life. And I think that, you know, I encourage people who are writing, it's okay to be a generalist. It's okay to, you know, to be sort of interested in one thing and write a lot about that thing and then later grow up and write about other things, right?
Yeah, I think it's sometimes we put ourselves in so many boxes, you know. Why can't you be a writer and a podcaster and an athlete or and a dad? And why can't you love working out and also love hamburgers? I mean, why can't you do that? You know, it's like we put ourselves in these boxes all the time. And I think we are so much more than just one little thing. You're a writer, but you're so much more than that, right?
Well, it's hard for me to explain to people what I do for a living. And I think it used to be kind of annoying that that was true. Now I'm like, oh, maybe that's not such a bad thing. You know, like I don't say I'm a doctor. You know, I'm a million things. And, you know, it's taken me a while to embrace that actually might not be such a bad thing. Cause I grew up when I grew up, you were like one thing, you know, like people would say, what do you do for a living? And you'd say, I am a investment banker. I am a doctor. I am a lawyer. But I think that's different. And I don't know, it seems like maybe the millennial generation is cooler with that, like being kind of everything.
Yeah, I always answer that I'm a shark fisherman in Florida.
Just so people would be fascinated. Yeah, like who is the one you want to sit next to in an airplane?
No, because like the question, what do you do? It's interesting question, but it's much more interesting. Who are you? Like, what are your passions? Like, how are you living your life? What do you do is just one little facet of your life. It could be everything, but I think it's so much more than that. So, it's especially if you meet someone the first time, like, what do you do? Is that going to change the way I think about you now?
Just, right.
So,
it's
and all I don't,
status.
Yeah, I don't like that type of questions. So I always answer that and then we talk about something else because it's not important. You don't even know me. Get to know me and then I can tell you what I'm doing.
I know. It's a knee-jerk response. I just read an article with Terry Gross who, you know, I don't know, she's the host of this show called Fresh Air on NPR, which is she's been doing what we're doing right now since the 80s, you know, just interviewing interesting people. And they said, well, what is your best opening question? And she said that she always likes to ask people who she doesn't know, tell me about yourself. Yeah. Because it kind of puts it on them to, you know, so tell me about yourself. Like, what are they going to say? Like, you asked me a question like that. So what do you love, or who are you? You know, instead of like, what do you do for a living? It was more like, who are you? And I had to think about it because I'm not used to getting that question.
It's like, a hard question.
Yeah. I was like, damn, that's a hard first question.
It is. No warm ups.
Yeah. I'm like, can we start it with like, you know, working at Glamour magazine? Yeah. I mean, it was hard because it's like, it makes you have to look at, you know, what do you really value? And I think a lot of us are like, trained to think what they really value is what they do for a living. Like, who they are is what they do for a living.
Yeah.
And that's such a big thing. And that's such a head game to play on people because, you know, so much of the time we spend in our jobs, we don't even really like doing what we're doing. It's just how we're making a living. It's who we are, you know?
Yeah. I think, yeah, passion, all of that is important. But what I really like, how do I get impressed by a person is what they do when they're walking down the street by themselves and yeah. someone needs their help, or they're in a situation where you need to treat this person with respect, but you don't, or you do. I think that's interesting. That's who you are. Like, how do you play with your kids when it's just the two of you? You know, how do you talk to your wife?
Right.
When do you call your dad? Like, those are the things like that
make you.
For me, that's what like defines you as a human being. And then if you have a great career, great. Right. But even if you don't, at least you're a good, great human being, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the grass is always greener. I'm sure the people who they want to be successful, who are like what you're talking about. They want to like be successful, and the people who are successful just want to be good people. And it's, you know, I think people, we're so often just not happy with who we are. Yeah. You know, we're trying to be something else all the time.
Yeah.
And me included, like everything I'm saying is just stuff that I've gone through my whole life. And thankfully, I'm able to see it a little clearer.
Yeah. Are you happy with who you are now?
No, I'll never be happy with who I am. I am happier. Yeah. Can we say that?
Yeah.
I think that I'm probably happier with who I am now than I've ever been in my life, which is a good sign. And I think a lot of it has to do with just, you know, being a little bit more, or feeling a little bit more in control of who, of what I'm interested in, doing what I'm interested in every day, and not sort of trying to be somebody else for somebody else.
I think also we need to know that like we are enough, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes we forget that because we're thinking, I was a world medalist and I was thinking, oh, when I get to that level, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
It is an amazing experience, but let's face it, it doesn't change who you are. It changed maybe how people interact with you in that given moment because you have that accomplishment, but you still have to live with yourself.
Yeah. It's fleeting, right?
Yeah. If you're a douchebag, you're going to be a douchebag. Yeah. Like, you know, it's...
Those moments, like you think you want them all your whole life and then they come and you're like, they're great for a moment and then they're over. And then it's kind of like, you just go back to life the way it was. Right. And I think sometimes we try so hard to like, I mean, I went through a little period where I wanted to be famous, you know, and it's like, oh, if I'm just famous, that would be, you know, this is when I was much younger. But, you know, look at people who are famous, how miserable they are. Also, like, it's never enough. Like, you're famous one day and you're not, and then you want to be famous, you know, like, I think those are not the things that are going to make you a satisfied and happy person in life, ultimately, like those little moments. In fact, I thought for so long, all I want in my life is for people, you know, to love what I do and to like tell me, you know, be impressed with like what I do for a living. And now that people are, I'm kind of like almost embarrassed by it. Like, I don't really actually want that as much. Like, I don't want people telling me how great I am. Like, it doesn't make me feel better. So it's like, you think you want these things and you don't even want them, you know?
I know. I think like it could be nice, but it, most importantly, self-development and how, who are you as
human being? Who are you? I think that is the most important. I am definitely learning in my life that if you're not happy with who you are and don't know who you are and what you value and what is important to you, then all these things that you set for yourself is like that. Oh, if I only do that, I'll be happy. It won't mean, it's like eating junk food. It feels good at that moment, but then you have a stomach, you know, later, you know.
Oh, you're so right. And just two more questions. And
they better not be hard ones.
Yeah. So you talked about your dad and he loved reading books. Do you remember which was his favorite book?
My dad loved Murakami, who is a Japanese writer. He loved Richard Ford. I have to say that my dad's taste in books was never my taste in books and still isn't. Although now that my dad passed away in 2004 and I still, you know, again, I don't want to have regrets, but I do wish that we had spent more time talking about books, because he was so interested in reading, and he found so much. He was always interested in books that were very emotional and or with like very intellectual, and like I'm interested more in books that are like tell amazing stories, are like more thrilling. So that his taste in books, I think his appreciation for reading rubbed off on me. I think the actual books that he liked aren't really my cup of tea. I mean, he tried to make me read the Hardy Boys when I was a kid, and I was like, oh my God, it's the worst thing I've ever read. So we never really saw eye to eye on the book thing. We both like the New Yorker magazine. I think that's one thing we both like.
That's cool. Yeah. And one last question, something that I ask all my guests is, if you can tell the listeners right after this podcast to go ahead and do something to get a little bit closer to their passion, their dream, or just make a change in their life, what could they do right now?
Right now. Just be present. Try to do, here's a little thing that I've been trying to do lately. Don't listen to the news. Don't look at your phone. Just try it for like 2 or 3 hours and just try to be like really present and aware and observing what's going on, you know, in life, who you are, what your friends are saying, and really listen to what people are saying. One of the things that podcasting has taught me is how to listen, because to be a good podcaster, you have to be a good listener. You're a good listener. You hear what I say, you come back to it. A lot of times when you hear people interview somebody, they don't listen. They just sort of have their questions ready and they're not really listening. So, you know, observe and listen, and you will be amazed when you're actually listening how much you hear and how much you had been missing. And turn it off just for a minute. You can, I know it's hard because whatever, for work, we have to be connected so much, but I would say try that and see what, you know, even if it's just for 3 hours, and just see what happens.
Yeah. I love that. Thank you so much, Jonathan, for doing this.
Oh my God, it was my pleasure. What a great interesting conversation. Thank you for making me have to think more about stuff than I normally do.
Yeah, no, I love talking to you, and I learned a lot, and it was interesting to follow your journey from this kid finesse in
kid finesse
in New London, Connecticut, all the way to Los Angeles. You're a father now, you're a husband, you're a writer, podcast host, you all these amazing things, but you're a human being. And that's so amazing. And thank you to all our listeners that are, without you, we couldn't do this. And that's why we're here, to share, so to get into your mind so you can create a little bit better life for yourself. We truly appreciate you. And if you want more of what we are doing, you should sign up for our newsletter. We will also get a couple of free chapters of my book, The Goal Book. So just visit ilsuccess.com, sign up to make sure to always get our podcast and just be part of our journey, because I want to help 10 million people in 10 years and I can't do it myself. We need to create this tribe. We need to share. We need to help. Yeah, that's it for today, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.